All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the Quill and Query podcast. My name is Brandon Hall. As always, I'm joined today by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you doing today?
I'm hot, but I'm good.
Yeah, I think anyone over like on the East Coast can definitely relate at the moment.
Yeah,
it's 97 here with a feels like temp of 110. So very fun to step outside.
Yeah.
I've been trying to
beat us
with
what it feels like. Yeah.
I always wonder how they calculate that.
I think I don't know. It's got to be something like humidity adds to it, I guess, or something like that. Because it's 98 here with a feel of 103.
That would make sense. The humidity is what gets us down here. It's awful. I hate it so much. But
yeah, agreed. Again, I don't mind a good summer swelter, but not this soon and not this long. It's like all week.
I know. Just going to be hiding inside, praying that the AC doesn't go out again.
Yes. No kidding.
All right. Well, we have a little bit of a abbreviated episode today, as we said, I believe, in our last episode and on our socials, a little bit more of a laid back thing today, which worked out well with the heat because I feel like that's affecting my brain power even more. So, you don't have to deal with brain fried Brandon too much today.
I agree.
But yeah, we have some fun themes for these kind of mini episodes. This one is going to be a writing would you rather. So Ash and I have a lot of fun questions for each other. I'm very interested to see how you answer some of those.
Me too.
But before we get into all that, Ash, quick reading update from us both as usual. What are you currently reading? I know you're probably struggling to read in the heat like me because you just don't want to do anything. I'm sure I don't.
Yeah,
but
this is where like a Kindle comes in really well because it's like light and you don't have to like get your sweat on the pages of your book. But I am currently reading Bury Your Bones in the Midnight Soil or Bury Our Bones in the Midnight Soil by V.E. Schwab. It's like her newest book. It's a sapphic historical vampire story and I'm really liking it so far. She very rarely does anything wrong in my book. I didn't like The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, but otherwise, I'm loving it. What are you reading?
Very cool. I'm still on Dream Songs and The Devils. Still kind of slowly making my way through those. I think more Dream Songs as of late than The Devils, not for any particular reason other than I've just been in like a big short story mood lately.
Yeah, love that.
And it's been a really good read. I did see your current read, the one by V.E. Schwab, in the store a few days ago, actually, and I almost picked it up. The only reason I didn't is because there was a really obnoxious sticker on the front, so I just told myself I'll order it from Amazon. But no, I know she's one of your favorites, so but I haven't actually read any of her stuff yet, so I was curious.
It's really good. It's
her latest.
It's a standalone, so it's like if you want to delve in, it's nice. I mean, I haven't finished it, so I'm assuming it is. It's a hefty boy, but it's, I think it's just one story. Sorry, one second. She's got the bone because of course she does. I get the short story concept though too because it's kind of satisfying to read a full story and not have to go 500, 600 pages to finish it. So and you said you were writing or like working on some more short stories or like
Working on a couple. I don't want to say too much about them yet, but one is like sci-fi and then another one is my typical fantasy.
Cool.
So it's reading short stories from Martin, especially like throughout his publishing career, has been very interesting to see like his growth from the beginning.
Yeah, right. That's very cool. Well, nice. Look at us. Look at us reading or trying to read.
I'm just trying to survive right now.
Literally just trying to survive. All of us.
Well, I don't really have any indie releases, spotlight, or audience questions. And the only real podcast update is be on the lookout for more of these mini episodes in the future. We have a few other ones planned with each with their own kind of fun, unique topic. We would love to hear what you think of this one when you get to the end. But like we said before, just be on the lookout for more of these. We'll probably fill these in kind of sporadically. There's not really a set pattern yet. So
just whenever we feel like it, keep everyone on their toes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
It looks like Riverside is making me yellow again, so my light did not help. But we'll find a solution eventually. Huh, so sorry to everyone who has to look at me being yellow. I promise it's not my natural skin tone. It's really not.
No, it's just the heat of the sun coming through and scorching you.
Yeah, that's how hot it is, really. All right. Well, Ash, I think we can just dive right into the questions that we have for the week. So
let's do it.
I guess do you want to kick us off, or do you want me to kick us off? Sure. I'm good either way.
Yeah, we can like trade off questions. Like I'll do one and you can do one.
Yeah. Okay.
Want to do that? All right, cool. So we're playing Would You Rather today. And so the first Would You Rather is, would you rather only be able to write in first person or third person?
Ooh. All right, this one is probably the easiest one for me to answer out of all the ones we have.
I think I know.
Yeah, for me, it's going to be third person just because mm-hmm. that's what I typically write anyway. I find it a lot easier to write third person limited viewpoints. It's just my go-to, and I feel like the prose comes more naturally to me in that style of writing. Mm-hmm. I have tried first person perspectives before, and while I don't hate it, I don't hate writing it, the prose does not come as naturally, so I have to like work a lot more consciously with it. It's weird though, because I can read both. Like, I love both in my reading. It's just when it comes to writing, I feel like I'm more in my element with the third person limited viewpoints than a first person POV.
No, I totally. I feel pretty much word for word exactly the same way. I tend to write more like I statements and poetry. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it's all third person. I don't mind reading in first person. Like, I don't mind stories that are first person, but most of the time it's gotta be third. I feel like I have more control mm-hmm. over the story in that regard. So I agree. Same.
Yeah, it's weird. When I'm writing in first person, I feel like it comes out more like robotically, like I did this and then this and then I went to this place. I don't know, it's weird. I don't have a mastery of first person like I feel like I do with the other. So
I agree. Maybe practice more, but also I have zero interest, so
I'm sure practice would help. It's just I don't really feel a need to do it.
Right.
All right, well, I'll kick us off with the next question. Would you rather be forced to write 1,000 words every single day or do one 10,000 writing or 10,000 word writing sprint per month?
This was a hard one because I feel like we've discussed like procrastination so heavily and how sometimes sitting down and grinding it out is the best way possible. I would like to pretend that I'm 1,000. Like if I were forced, I would choose that. But I think that would be way too stressful when I could take one day out of the month and just kind of knock everything out. So I think I would rather do the 10,000 words at a time. But I would have to ask many clarifying questions on what that entails. So,
right. Yeah. This is definitely one of those. It depends. I feel like, I would love to say I would want to write 1,000 words a day consistently. I just don't know that I could realistically maintain that for a long time. Right. I feel like if you have 29 days off in the month, it's not hard to be super productive on the 30th day.
And then if you have like a early weekend the beginning of the month, then you can knock it out early. Like there's all these, but then if the genie comes and he's like, okay, you know, you either have to choose one or the other, I'm like, okay, but mm-hmm. am I guaranteed time every day to get this 1,000 words done? Or is it like with your current schedule, it's 1,000 words or death? Then I'm like, well, I'll just do the 10,000. But anyway.
Yeah. It's very, there's a lot of asterisks at the end of our answers with that
there
one.
There are. Yeah. It's so straightforward. Never is. Okay. All right. Would you rather get amazing views? Oh, sorry. Would you rather get amazing reviews from critics but low sales, or tons of sales and terrible Goodreads reviews? I think I know what your answer is going to be.
This one, I think I wrote this one, but it basically boils down to what if you had to choose between positive critical reception versus positive commercial reception, which would you choose? Like, if you were only guaranteed one and choosing one meant you don't get the other. Yeah, I feel like I don't want the commercial success if it means everyone hates my book. That's a very tough sell for me. Like that, yeah, don't get me wrong, the money would be nice, but if everyone hates your book, what's the chance that you get to write another one?
Right.
Yeah. So I feel like with this, you know, the low sales, at least everyone still likes your book. So you have that going for you. You still feel good about yourself. I think that's the one I have to go with. The positive reviews, but low sales is where I'm leaning. What about you?
I agree. I would rather have like a handful of amazing 5-star reviews than have 1,000 horrible. I don't know. I just like, if that means like less popularity, but good quality work, you know? It's like when like an artist kind of prices their work and people are like, oh my gosh, that's too high. And it's like, well, a lot went into this, so it's worth this much money. It's kind of like, reviews can be that way. It's like, no, if they're just a handful, but they're all awesome, that means more to me personally than having like a million people have read my book and 98% of them hating it.
All right. We are definitely going through these faster than I thought.
We are flying through these. I feel so bad, but I guess we're learning as we go with these short episodes, huh?
Yeah, it's totally a new format. So don't worry. I'm sure I can think of some new ones to fill in at the end if we need to.
Okay.
All right. Would you rather be forced to write in a new genre for every book or only ever write fantasy?
Oh, easy one for me. I would always just write fantasy. I love we've talked about this before. I have so many ideas for different kind of like meddling in different genres, for sure. So it's not off the table in reality, but if someone was like, if the genie was giving me a choice, I think I would stick to fantasy. It's just where I'm most comfortable and it's where, it's like where my heart lies. So I think that would be an easy choice for me.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I feel like if you have to write in a different genre, like for every book, it'd be very difficult to master one genre.
Right.
Because, I mean, that's from what I've heard from some of my favorite authors, is it is very difficult to hop over to another genre, like even from fantasy to sci-fi. Not getting the time to spend in one genre learning and developing your craft, I feel like would be very difficult because you'd essentially be starting from scratch with each new book, like completely. You wouldn't be able to take a lot of knowledge from one to the other because if you're you build a fantasy world, now you need to start over. You need to build, you know, characters in a world for sci-fi setting or horror or whatever it is you're doing.
Right.
So I would be totally fine doing fantasy forever. Like you can do so much with a fantasy setting. I feel like that it's not really that limiting.
Yeah, I agree. It's been interesting with V.E. Schwab's because she, the new book, because The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue there are enough overlaps in terms of like historical fantasy or like, Addie LaRue didn't have a lot of magic, and this one, as of right now, doesn't quite have that much. It's just like the vampire component, but like Addie LaRue wasn't that great in my opinion. And then this one, I can tell she's just gotten so much better and taken just like more time and more care, I think, or at least given herself more time and kind of expanded her reach while sticking to like this very historical fantasy-esque space. So. Yeah, it's like you just get better the more and more you write in a genre. And while it would be fun and a good challenge, it's like, well, if every book you write has to be in a different genre, then you can't do a series. So like, you either write like 1,000 page book or you just keep it small. So yeah, I think I admire people who can write in different genres for sure, but I don't know if that would be something for me.
Yeah. as a follow-up, since we are burning through the questions pretty quickly, are there any, if you were confined to just fantasy forever, are there any like specific subgenres of fantasy that you like look at and say that maybe I'd like to write that someday?
Yeah, I think historical fantasy would be one that like ties my own actual like degrees in with. I think urban fantasy would be really fun. I don't have any current like urban fantasy story ideas, but that would be really, like, I love Holly Black for that reason. Yeah, so I think like historical fantasy and urban fantasy would be the two that I would be most interested in like delving into more, particularly as I like don't actually read that much in that, in those subgenres. It would be fun to kind of really explore. Yeah, what about you? Are there any that you'd be like, oh yeah, like I would love to do that?
Yeah, I actually was gonna say the same too, because those one of them was gonna be like flintlock fantasy, but I feel like a lot of times it might overlap with urban fantasy to some degree, but I like both of those, and historical fantasy would be really fun because I definitely do not have like your depth of knowledge when it comes to history, but it would just, the amount of like research and making sure you're getting things right while also blending it with making stuff up would be a really interesting like balance that I think would be fun to explore.
Yeah, it would take a lot of research. It's like, yeah, that's one of those things that would take way too much time for me, because I'm such like a nuanced, like, how are they building the castles back in the day? What stone? Yeah. And it's like, okay, does this really matter right now? This is not important. But yeah, it's kind of fun too, because I also do research for a living, so I just collect knowledge. You're like, ooh, wow, I could use that. And,
I think that's a very writer esque feeling to have, like just thinking every little random bit of knowledge could be useful for your books someday, most likely won't be, but you never know.
Yeah, no, fully 100%. Okay, I think I'm next, right?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Ooh. Would you rather delete your current draft or all of your notes?
I would rather delete all of my notes if I had to choose, just because I feel like I have those more memorized. Like I remember a lot of my notes. I just write them down for organizational purposes. So like if I need to go find something specific, I don't have to sit and think about it as much. Right. I can go look for it. But it's not really that I feel like I'm going to forget those things. That's why I write them down. It's more just, like I said, for the organization of it. Mm-hmm. When it comes to my draft, I do not remember every line of prose to like confidently enough that I would be able to recreate it accurately. Even just sitting at like 40,000 words right now for A Knight of Knives, there's no way. Like maybe the first few paragraphs I could do pretty close, and then it would just get progressively worse from there. So I mean, because with drafting, you already have to like do a lot of rewriting, and like no one publishes their first draft. So I feel like I could deal with rewrites, but I don't know. I got lost where I was going with that. But
no, that's okay. No. I think I'm the notes as well for that reason, because it's like, I've worked so hard already in just like the meager, 12 chapters that I have right now. And I remember I was using a different program, and it was a cloud-based program. I was writing on my iPad on a plane. And when I got off the plane and connected to the Wi-Fi, a glitch happened somewhere along the way that it like deleted a whole chapter and a half. And I was so devastated, because I was like, I knew what I'd written, but in terms of like line structure and witty dialogue, I could remember a couple of things, but not enough to like reconstruct what I wrote. And you're right, like you eventually edit that down and it might not even make it to the final cut, but those building blocks are so important to get you to your final, that like the world building and the things that I want to include that are in my notes are already in my head. They're things that I can kind of pick and build with, but then I've got the actual physical thing that I'm like, if this goes, I'm going to lose my mind. So
yeah,
here's a warning to everybody. Also, back up your drafts in a variety of places so that, you know, if
anything
happens.
Definitely. This should be
salvageable.
Like modern writing 101. Back up your drafts as many times as you need to feel secure, really, because
In
you can never have too many.
No.
Yes.
No, actually.
Yeah, don't put them all in the same place.
Right. I need to go through and actually do that. Especially with my draft, like the outline stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like I need to keep backing that up in other places. So good reminder.
Yeah, I say all that, but I don't know if all of my backups are up to date either. So it's a good reminder.
Go. Yeah. Your biannual reminder to, gotta do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm up next. So would you rather cut your favorite scene from A Filthy Hunger or change the ending?
I think I could change my ending if I needed to. But there is one scene in particular that is like so, in my mind, the coolest. And like it doesn't happen until book two. But it's so important that it couldn't not be in there. So I'm like, I could adjust the ending. Like I could change it enough that I would be satisfied with how it ends, but the ending is not necessarily, it's important obviously, but it's not as important as like how we got there.
Gotcha.
So yeah. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah. So I'm actually the opposite. I don't want to change my ending at all. I feel like my ending, like the ending that I have both for the book, the first book in the series, and then just the series overarching ending, is like has been set in stone for so long, and it's so integral to like the themes of the story and the way the characters are building toward it and everything.
Yeah.
That it would really depend on how significantly I'm changing the ending. Like if it's just a few tweaks, I could probably make it work. But if it was like drastically different, I don't think I could do it. I would rather I'd rather cut like my favorite scene, and I know that's not like I want to do that. It's just I feel like from a reader perspective, for example, if you picked it up, you might say it feels like something's missing because I cut this scene out. But I feel like if you were to read it and the ending was not what I originally planned, you would dislike it a lot more for the ending not being there. But yeah, it's
that I get, like that I totally understand. I think it seems like there's a lot of weight to your ending, and mine there is weight, but it's not as important as like some other, you know, moments throughout. So yeah, well here we go. This is the first time we've differed on our choice.
Yeah. Are you able to I know it's hard without spoiling, but are you able to say why like that scene is so integral that you don't want to cut it at all? Like I'm just curious.
Yeah, it's like a no spoilers, I'll try not to, but it's a huge dynamic shift in Kara's like character arc. It's a moment in which it's kind of like a David versus Goliath moment. And she does something no one has ever done before, but it also kind of messes her up. So then the second half of the whole story is like her kind of coming to terms with this new version of herself. And in terms of like bad guys and things like that, it also shifts the dynamics there. So yeah. Like the story can't happen without this happening. So,
yeah.
I mean, it
makes
like,
sense.
If the editors, you know, if I were to get traditionally published and they were like, we can't have this, and like, this just doesn't make sense. And I'd be like, well, I need to go to someone else, I think, or find a way to make this happen in some sense of like in some sense or form. So,
yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
We had a chatter says Brandon Hall, this name reminds me of the character in Mike Ryan's book. I don't think I've ever
I'm not familiar.
Mike Ryan.
Which we'll what book and what character are we talking about? Is this a good comparison?
Yeah, Yeah, oh God, yeah. That's the first question. Oh, funny.
Okay. Okay, I think you're up next.
Cool. We're not doing too bad. We only have like 15-ish more minutes.
Yeah, I found a couple to fill in the time if we need to.
Okay, so. Cool. Would you rather deal with a massive fan base or a small group of loyal followers?
So I actually wanted to follow up on this one because when you first put this in, it wasn't, the question isn't like a massive following, but they're all critical, right? Like that was, it would just,
there's no, do you it's like loyal, like everyone, when I say fan base, I mean like people who really enjoy your stuff.
Okay.
But gotcha. There's a lot of them, or yeah, like people who you know and are like really into your stuff and are just mm-hmm. kind of more like casual fans, but you know, consistent, if that makes yeah. sense.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Think like G.R. Martin fan base, Sarah J. Maas fan base, like those mass Lord of the Rings fan bases.
Gotcha.
Versus yeah. like, you know, indie published fan bases.
Yeah. This is a hard one because naturally they both come with pros and cons, mm-hmm. of course.
Yeah.
I feel like if I'm going to have fans, let's go big. I'll go with the big fan base and I'll live with all of the heat and, you know, pressure that comes with, even though I'd probably regret that choice eventually. Yeah. because the downside to that is you have a lot more people that are going to be mad at you for very small things that you might do that they might not like with your storytelling. So it's definitely a double-edged sword because as the fan bases get that large and stuff, that there's always going to be like that toxic vocal minority, or I mean, even sometimes it's a vocal majority. It's just kind of the way it goes. But I feel like as I've aged, I've developed enough of a thick skin that I might be able to get through it. Obviously with something like that, you don't know until you've lived it, but I think for that one, I'm just going to go big. I'll go for the massive fan base and hopefully it works out.
I know. I felt kind of like selfish thinking about this question because I was like, I think I know what my answer would be. But knowing all the caveats too, like, I feel like if there are upsides and downsides to both, like you just said, if sometimes the smaller fan bases can get really like, I don't know, can get mean. And then it's way more personal because they're like, you know, you can interact with them more easily.
Yeah.
Not being like swamped with Instagram messages constantly or whatever. And I feel like the parasocial relationship gets like way too like tight there.
Yeah.
But bigger, you know, that comes with its own like chaos and someone's going to be mad about something at all times. So yeah, it's but it would be nice to like be able to have reached that many people and that many people to have liked my book enough to be loyal fans. So I think that's why I think some people shy away from wanting to say like, I want to be like a famous writer, because that seems like a little too uppity or like self-important. But I don't know. I want my book on people's shelves and to be known by name. And
totally.
The book world is small, but it's the fantasy world's even smaller. So it's it's not like you can get that big with it, unless you're Sarah J. Maas and whatever.
Yeah, I think it's all about I think what your intent is when you say that too, right? Like you want. I mean, it's not. We talked in our last episode about people who want the fame of being an author without actually putting in the effort, and then they go to AI. So I think in like our case and most people's cases, it's a little different when you want to put in the work, you want to create something great, and then you want that something great to receive recognition and have an impact on people. I think that's a little less selfish. I mean, don't get me wrong. To some degree, but I think it's a little, I can understand that more, you know. I do kind of think sometimes when some people say
that they don't want their books to get famous, that they're, it is just kind of like a, one of those socially expected things that say like, no, I just want a small fan base. And where, but it's, I feel like it's okay to acknowledge that if you do want, you know, a large following, of course, just go about it the right way. But
No, I agree. And it's like any profession really too, you know, it's like you want to succeed at your profession, and sure, maybe I don't want to be a CEO, but I do want to, you know, be good enough at what I do that people know that I do good work. So
Yeah.
I mean, there's like anything inherently wrong with that.
Yeah. It's the same thing, like in every aspect of life for me, especially like you said, with my, my day job, really, like I'm ambitious there too. It's just, I just have large goals that I'd like to,
I dig it.
All right. So I'm up next, right?
I think so.
Okay. All right. I've got this one. Would you rather format your entire book or edit your entire book?
Edit. I have no interest in formatting. How y'all edit or formatted that? The anthology, I have no idea. I've heard it's a slog and there's a lot of trial and error. So I would rather slave away at my editing drafts and all that kind of stuff and do that myself and get caught in the wheel of never ending edits than I would want to learn how to format a book. I don't know what that says about me, but it's no thank you.
Well, it's funny you mentioned how did we format. So the formatting for Blades for Hire basically went, I can do this. So I went into Atticus and I did it because I was trying to save, like, I got some quotes and it was going to be close to like $300 or $400 to format, which totally fair. It was a big, it's a big book. But I just was, since it's a charity project, was trying to cut costs as much as possible in certain areas. And so I tried to do it myself. Little did I know, there's a lot that looks right in Atticus, but is not right when you go to print it. So I sent like the final format file over to Bex, and she graciously went through and highlighted everything that was wrong for me. And I looked at it and it was so overwhelming that I was, and I, it was like, I think it was like a Sunday and I had to work the next day, and I was like, do you mind doing this? It, like, I could pay you, because there was so much that she pointed out that I just, like, it looks right in Atticus, wouldn't but it's noticed. Not correct. Sure. Like, it, yeah, there's a lot to it that you don't know without learning it. And so, yeah, she was very gracious to point that out. And then to take on the act of, like, actually formatting and fixing everything for me, which I greatly appreciate. And I can't give Bex enough credit for that. Because she did a great job. If you, if anyone's picked up Blades for Hire and you've opened it, it's really, it's formatted really nicely. So, but yeah, all of that to say, I don't think I want to format again. just because there's so much that goes into it, like I said, and it's just, it's like a whole different, I mean, editing also is like kind of a different mindset that you have to get into, but I feel like it's more, it's more adjacent to the writing, whereas formatting is like, there really is not a lot of creativity that goes on here. It's very much like technical side of writing. So editing, I feel like I might also be able to, you know, I might not be super confident in my abilities there right now, but I feel like that's something I could learn and kind of get better at. There's formatting. I mean, I'm sure I could learn formatting too. It's just, I don't know that I want to at this point. It was so stressful the first time around.
You're exactly right though. Like, it's, I feel like editing is a little bit of a softer slide versus formatting. It's like, you can't do this. This is not right. This is like, hi, Nicole. It's okay that you fell asleep doing homework. It's totally fine.
Hey, Nicole, good to see you.
Yeah, I all power to the formatters, all the love to the formatters and who enjoy doing it or taught themselves, like Bex. It's like, that is, that's something that I don't have the patience for, and I'm glad other people do it.
It's, formatting to me is like, it's almost like video editing. Like, I know some YouTubers who, they will record everything, all the takes, all the audio and everything, but then they will send it to someone to chop it together because they just, they hate that part of the job because there's no, there's not really a lot of creativity. Like, I mean, a different type of creativity that goes into that side of things, but like, they're like, I want it cut this way. I want it to flow correctly, but I can't do it. Like, it's too,
My, my partner, he, you know, is a cinematographer, so he knows how to edit videos. And anytime he shows me, he's like, oh, you want to come look at this rough edit or whatever? And I look at, I don't even know what it's called, but like the bar at the bottom that shows you all the layers of your video. And he like zooms in. I'm like, whoa, whoa, this is just the rough version of that. That's pretty crazy. That's insane. It's just like your brain can't compartmentalize any of that information. I don't know how he does it, but he does. So yeah, again, each person has their own thing, and I'm glad for it, but formatting and all that is not mine.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think I'm losing track of who went last here. Is this one you?
I think it's the last one's me. All right.
Okay.
Would you rather your favorite author review your book without knowing they'd like it or not, mm-hmm. or be interviewed by your favorite author? This is kind of just like a random one. Would you rather?
Yeah, no, this is a fun one.
I
think I changed my answer, because I think when I first saw this, I was like, I want to know what they think of my writing. But then I was like, oh, but I don't know if they're going to like it or not. So that there's that caveat. Because I feel like the potential downside to being interviewed by them is that it goes slightly awkwardly, and like that's it. And I feel like I could live with that, but I don't know how I'd feel if George R. R. Martin reviewed my book and was like, this sucks. And I don't know if I'd be able to write again for a while after that. That could be like potentially soul crushing to read.
You're like, I'm done writing for a really long time after
this.
But then, the interview could also go sour. Or like, what if they're a jerk? Or like, what if they don't really care and they're mean? Like,
yeah, totally.
That also ruins the whole thing too.
I think I lean towards the interview, because it'd be fun to have a conversation. It's more back and forth than a review, which is kind of more one-sided, I guess, is where I'm at with that. I've constantly watched Martin's interviews and other favorite author interviews. So it'd be really cool to like see the flip side of that, and they're interviewing you. That would be like a career milestone moment, I think. Like, these people that you grew up watching talk about their books are now asking about yours. I think that would be really cool. But how about you? How did you answer this one?
I was flipping back and forth as well. I think as of right now, I would actually like want them to review my book. I think like reviewing opens up like you existing in their mind, and if they like it, they want to keep an eye out, and then maybe you make it into a circle somewhere and they're like, oh my god, hey, like I really loved your book. It's kind of like when I see blurbs from like other authors I like on like newly published books, you know, it's kind of like that would be so cool to see. I think I would be way too nervous about being interviewed. I talk way too much, as you know. So it's like, I don't know. That interaction I would like think about for like days on end and feel so anxious and feel like an idiot, and then be like, oh my god, I have to like send them a message and be like, hey, thank you so much, I'm sorry if I was so weird. I don't know. That's just where my anxiety goes. Just like messing up. But at least I have like a finished product if they review it, you know, and I can just be like, all right. And if it's a bad review, or if they just don't review it because they didn't like it, doesn't change the fact that I love their writing. And if they go online and say it's the worst thing they've ever read, or like they, you know, that would be a blow. But I feel like I could handle that kind of professional blow versus like feeling I really messed up royally, like in an interview, or stumble or sweat through my clothes. Like, how embarrassing would that be? So that's kind of how I feel about that.
This is a tough one, because I feel like, I know I said I lean more towards the interview, but I do kind of keep going back and forth, because if I could get like a really good constructive criticism from one of my favorite authors, then I would lean in that direction. Like, because if they would, you know, it's different depending on what type of review they're giving. If they're like, if they come back to you with something like, this is really good, and this is what you should work on, this is what was not so good, that would be really invaluable to have from someone on that level as well. So And then, like you said, having, you know, if it's a glowing review and you got their name on your book saying this is great, like that's a great selling point. Like, I know Martin says he gets sent almost every new fantasy book and he has to be very selective about which ones he reads.
Sure.
Because everyone wants to put his, you know, his review little snippet on there. So
yeah, I've got a couple of mine too that I would be like, oh my gosh, but I'm sure they also get like hundreds and hundreds of inquiries to do that. And it's like, that's so cool. And how lucky would, you know, how lucky would it feel to have that happen? So yeah.
All right. Well, I've got two more for us to wrap up with, but they're going to be more on the writing side again. So the first one is going to be, would you rather have unlimited, like, inspiration, writing spark, but never any time to write? Or the flip side of that, always have time to write, but always feel like you have writer's block, no inspiration, no spark to sit down and write?
I feel like I would choose the time. I feel like I could 100% push, like, even if I had all the hours in the world to just, like, sit and get and grit through it, like, something could be made, right? It would be maybe, like, a slow roll. But to always, like, I already struggle with feeling I don't have enough time in the day to sit down, even when I'm not feeling creative. God, yeah, that would be bad. I just need more time, so I'll deal with writer's block if I needed to.
I think for me, I'm gonna go with the. I'm actually gonna go the opposite. I'm gonna go with no time, just because I feel like it's hard because I know it would stress me out very much. But I feel like I'm a lot more dependent on like that spark for my writing sessions sometimes, and. Okay. I'm also someone who also totally struggles with, I don't have enough time in the day, but I feel like as of like lately, I've been doing better about making time for things rather than always saying, I don't have time to do that. As hard as it can be sometimes, like it really is a struggle, but I feel like if I had that creative drive all the time, I would definitely be more intentional about creating the time to use it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
But I can also definitely see the flip side where you're at.
Yeah, that's a really hard one. I know. Yeah. I mean, it truly is like, I try so hard to make time, but I already I very much feel like thin all the time. So I feel like I could push through writer's block very easily because I'm already in that kind of like, I've got the whole table in our living room or kitchen is like filled with laundry that I've been putting off for weeks, you know? And so it's just like, I feel like I could go that far. But also on the flip, it's like, oh, to be always creative would be amazing. Yeah. So I don't know.
I guess it's really just about what struggle you want to pick and which one you think you can power through the best.
Yeah, exactly. And thank goodness I don't have to worry about actually picking and choosing any of these, because that would be so hard.
Yeah, I know. We have to choose for the sake of the podcast, but I'm glad I don't have to live with some of these decisions.
Oh, right. Right.
All right. Well, our last one that I have, this one is going to require a bit of a pre-answer from you. So do you, when you have a writing session, is it usually going to be in the beginning of the day or the end of the day? I can't remember what where you usually fall with that.
It's usually could it vary? The end of the day.
End of the day.
It's usually at the end of the day, but on the weekends I prefer like mid-morning. So like in 9 to noonish. I like daytime writing most of all. So if I've got a few hours in the evening and it's still light out, I like that, but by the time it goes down or it's like too dark outside in the morning, I'm like just ready to go to sleep. So
Okay, so this one is going to be, would you rather always write at that same time but you have to write every day, or go back to like that single writing time a month but it has to be at the opposite time that you wouldn't normally write? So if you normally write in the end of the day, it would be in the morning. I know that's a bit of a loaded question, so the way I worded it was kind of weird.
No, that's, I think I would do the same time every day. Consistency is my word of the year. So if I had to wish for consistency, that would be, I think, yeah.
Same. I'm choice. Very.
What about you? Are you like a morning? You're a morning writer, aren't you?
I used to be, but lately it's been night. Strangely enough, it's I don't know why. I really don't. It's just, I think it's because in the morning, during the weekdays, I know work is coming up, and I can't not think about that. But when it's night, no, I don't have to stress about that. Lately, when I sit down to write, I like to not think about what else I have to do in the day. So doing it later in the day has been very helpful.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm also a very routine driven person. Like if I'm going to do something every day, I'd prefer to do it at the same time every day.
Right.
So yeah, I think I would stick with same time, every day. Yeah,
I'm really working really, really. I was on a good roll for a while and then had a couple of bad weeks. So I was waking up early and then either reading or writing for at least like 30, 45 minutes. And it was really nice because the time change happened and then it's like nice and light out in the morning. So I've got to get back into that as soon as possible because I really did enjoy it. And then, shit hit the fan and. That's also a learning lesson is like, even when things get crazy, you have to keep pushing through the consistency. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for all of our would you rather questions for the week. That was pretty fun though. I got some interesting answers. We actually differed on some, which is not a usual occurrence, but
I know I was like the first few, we both agreed. I'm like, is this just going to be one of those episodes where we all agree on everything?
Yeah, it's gonna but be no, like, that was I agree had... with you. Yeah. Every time.
Hey, me too. Oh my God. Oh, funny.
I almost worry that comes off as like scripted sometimes, but I'm like, no, it just genuinely aligns in a lot of ways.
I know. Maybe we need to have like a guest co-host every now and then who just is like the complete opposite of us. And then just just we can
find someone who disagrees vehemently on every issue.
Yes. Yeah, that'd be really hard to find. I feel like we would have to really find like, I don't know, someone in maybe like a genre outside of ours or like just adjacent and like an actual romantasy writer to come in and just be like, no, I write whatever. Like I write at 4 in the morning when I don't know. But yeah, it is always funny how much we agree, which it's not a bad thing these days, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Cool and Query. I'll open it up to anyone in the chat to let us know what you thought of this shorter episode. We, like I said, we have a few more planned, but if you have any ideas for these mini episodes that you'd like to see us explore, be sure to let us know. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun. And I'm excited for some of the other ones that we have planned as well. I think they'll be super interesting.
Yeah. It's nice to just kind of like take a breath and have fun. Not that we don't have fun on these like podcasts in general, but I tend to take like the normal, I take it seriously. I'm like, oh, we're like trying to do something here, but these are kind of just like, this is more fun. And Nicole agrees. So just hanging out with friends every now and then.
Especially with our last episode being really like serious, deep dive discussion on AI, it's nice to take a break and
Yeah, I agree. Agree again. Shocking.
All right, y'all. That's going to do it for Quill Inquiry. Thank you so much, Ash. That was a super fun discussion. And everyone in the chat, stay cool. Ash and I will do our best.
Stay cool.
But yeah, that's going to be all from me. Sounds Ash, you have anything?
No lasting comments. This was fun. We'll do it again.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining. See you guys in the next one.
All right. Bye, y'all. See ya.